Good morning, Nach enthusiasts. Welcome to Perek Tes of Melachim Beis. Today we're going to be focusing on a very disturbing story, and that is the rebellion of Yehu. Up till now, let's just recap. It's been in the Northern Kingdom, was broken away by Yerovam ben Nevat and his children. That family was destroyed by the family of Baasha and his children. Here, Baasha was in turn, his family was eradicated, and Zimri took their place, and Zimri was then killed by the family of Omri. Omri's family has lost the three generations, and that is Omri, Ahav, and finally Yehoram. This is now the Perek where that line of kings, that three generations of kings, are going to be wiped out like Eliyahu prophesied. So what happens? Elisha comes over and he calls one of the Bnei Nevi'im, one of the prophets. Some say that this is Yonah ben Amittai. We have a book of Yonah, which we read on the afternoon of Yom Kippur. So this is Yonah, who he is sending. And off he goes and says, go to speak to the officer in Ramoth Gilead, whose name is Yehu ben Yehoshaphat ben Nimshi, not the son of the king, but of Yehoshaphat, but he is this fellow called Yehu, and go and take him in a secret place, a cheder becheder, a room within a room, so that nobody's overhearing, and tell him that, and anoint him to be king, and tell him that he is going to wipe out the family of Ahab. He's going to kill Yehoram, and he's going to kill Jezebel, everything that's remaining like Eliyahu had said. And that's what he does. So off he goes, the prophet goes, and he says, can I have a quick word with you, Yehu? Takes him to a secret location, and he tells him this whole thing. As he finishes doing this, there's this prophecy. He adds in that the dogs are going to eat Jezebel when she's going to be killed by Yehu. And he opens the door and runs out, so obviously in a compromising situation over here. So off he runs, and Yehu walks out of the room, and all the people around him say, so, Madua bo hamashuga hazeh lecho? What did this mashuga, this strange, crazy person say to you? It could have been that in those days, you know, the people who worshipped Avodah Zarah thought the prophets of God were crazy. It could also be just the, you know, their actions to connect with Hashem. They spent a lot of time doing his spoiler, just spending a lot of time by themselves. And that, you know, sort of gave them this strange kind of look in society. And Yehu says, you know, they got the kind of things they say. Don't take it too seriously. So I said, oh, really? What did he say? And he says, he gave them the whole prophecy. Kozois, he tells them everything that this prophet had told him. And immediately, they suddenly just wake up and they grab their cloaks and they place it down, they throw it down in front of him, they place them on top of the steps, or, you know, they give them this position of honor, and they blow a shofar and they say, Molach Yehu. They realize that something has happened, they realize this is a moment, that this is not just, you know, a joke, and they anoint him as a king. So he goes together with all these officers who suddenly, you know, join behind his cause. And they start riding towards Ramoth Gilead, which is where the injured king Yehoram is now lying in wait. And so in the meantime, from Ramoth Gilead, Yehoram, who's recovering from his injuries, his guard on the tower says, I see Yehu coming, and he's got a shifas Yehu. He sees, like, oh, he's got the whole host behind him. So the king Yehoram says, go send a messenger. Off goes the messenger. As the messenger gets up and says, shalom malach shalom. So he turns to the messenger and says, so elacharai, join me. And the watchman on the tower says, Yehoram, the messenger seems to have joined him. So if they send another messenger, same thing happens. The watch guard says, Yehoram, the messenger has joined the pack. So finally Yehoram goes and gets into his own chariot, and he goes out to meet him. He goes with Ahaziyahu, the king of Yehuda. So the two kings, the king of Israel and the king of Yehuda, go out to meet him himself, Yehu. And they're standing facing each other, and he says, Hashalom, Yehu, Yehu, everything all right? What's the whole deal? Remember, Yehu is an officer in his army. So Yehu turns around and says very strongly, Mashalom, Azanune, Izevel, Imchok, Shafeha, Rabim. What? There's peace because of the infidelity of your mother, Jezebel. Remember that he's the son of Ahab and Jezebel, and because of her witchcraft. And when Yehoram hears this tone of voice and he sees that Yehu really means business, he immediately turns around and starts fleeing. But Yehu is clearly a practiced officer. and he pulls out his bow. He notches the arrow, shoots the arrow, and he hits Yehoram directly in the square of his back, and it penetrates his chest, pinning him and killing him on his chariot. Yehu immediately turns to the shalish, to the person who's riding with the king. Remember those days, you'd have to have at least two people riding a chariot, one directing and one shooting, right? So he turned to the person who's riding and he turns to him, his name is Bidkar. He says, Bidkar, you remember when we overheard what Eliyahu said would happen to the children of Ahav? Well, now it's happening. Go throw his corpse into the field of Navos, who his father Ahav took away from him. Because that was the curse of Eliyahu, that ultimately the blood of his children would be mixed in the blood of Navos for the false prophet, the false accusation of the stolen vineyard. And that's what he does. And this time, clearly Ahaziah, the king of Yehuda, has got cold feet and starts fleeing himself. Different accounts here in Melachim, it sounds more immediate. In Sefer Dirayim, it sounds a little more like a more elongated process. But nonetheless, he captures him and kills him too. Wow. And he is buried in his family ancestral burial plot in Ir David. In the meantime, he runs back. Yehu goes for his final action, returns to the area in Yisrael where Jezebel is still there. She looks out the window, she sees him coming, and she turns to him and scornfully says, "Hashalom, Zimri horeg Adonov. Oh, Zimri who kills his own master, are you Gwel?" What she's essentially doing, and the Malbim points that out, is she's kind of flattering him, but saying, "You're not the first person to kill their master." And so she's kind of trying to flatter him and give him at the same time as scorn him. So what does Yehu respond? He says, "Anybody in there on my side?" And three officers stick out their heads, and he says to them, "Please extricate her." And they throw her out of the window, and he tramples her to death with his horse. Pretty graphic peric, I'm afraid. The dogs grab hold of her and consume her. At the end, they only have her skull, her feet, and the palms of her hands, which are available. And he says, "Bury her remains." Because she is the daughter of a king, and he says the prophecy has been fulfilled that she'll be like dying on the earth, as Eliyahu and Elisha had said. Wow, what a parak! I mean, this is very heavy, very tough stuff. But this is the end of those who continue in such a way. So just a few points to ponder on the parak as a whole. Why exactly did Elisha himself not go to give this prophecy to Yehu? So the Chida points out that it was dangerous. You know, here you are essentially creating a rebellion. You're culpable with your life. That's a capital punishment. So Elisha was not going to put himself in such danger. It would be less noticed if it was simply a Ben Navi. It was one of the Bnei Navim. It was one of the students like Yonah at this point in time. Okay, let's move on a little bit more. The Malbim actually points out something quite fascinating, and that is, remember that Elisha had asked from Eliyahu, "I want pi shnai miruchacha, I want two times what you do." Well, if you go back to Melachim Aleph, Perek Yud Ches, Eliyahu got three things he needed to do. He was to appoint Elisha, to appoint Hazael, and to appoint Yehu. Notice that Eliyahu only did one of those. He only appointed Elisha. Elisha ended up doing the other two. He just appointed Hazael, the king of Aram, and now he just appoints Yehu as the king of Israel. In a certain sense, he is getting double of Eliyahu's prophecy. The reason why this waited was because Hashem had rachamim on Ahav not to do this to Ahav in his life, but it went over into the next generation. He has Elisha finishing up the actual role and the job of his teacher, Eliyahu. It is interesting that the Mephoreshim point out that nobody was going to believe this person, but Hashem helped them. Hashem gave them siyata dishmaya, that they should all believe that really, even though they thought at the beginning that this person was a meshuga, that he was true, and this instigated the rebellion itself. If we move a little further into the perek itself, one thing which is really troubling is, why is that he kills Ahaziahu? Why did he kill the king of Yehuda? His prophecy was to kill the king of, he was to kill Ahav. Why and his descendants, Yehoram, why did he kill the king of the south? So Rashi gives a whole explanation that he went back and he was doing Avodah Zarah. He went back to Shomron, not to Yehuda. Shomron is in the north, not the south. And clearly if he's going to Shomron, he's consulting in witchcraft. And so he's going back to his old terrible ways, and that's why he married to death. But the Mitzvot points out something even simpler. And that is, let's understand this. Ahaziahu is the progeny of Achav as well. Remember the intermarriage? Yehoshaphat, the daughter, his son. That means to say Ahaziah was part of the evil. When evil is rooted out, it is rooted out completely and holistically. Last point to think about in this parak is, you know, this pretty terrible and graphic picture of Ezel being consumed by the dogs and only her skull, hands, and feet left. So Chazal point out, and the Radak quotes this, is that what really happens over here is that she had a schus, even though she was a terrible person. She was one of the most evil people that Tanakh talks about, Ezel, what she did and what she brought about in this kingdom. She wasn't even Jewish. But nonetheless, there was one thing she had in her merit, and that was when people got married, when she saw a wedding procession, she would stand on her balcony and she would clap her hands and stamp her feet and nod her head to be mislameach lachasan in the kala, to be mislameach newlyweds. And because of that schus, those limbs of her body, even though this woman was almost totally and completely evil, Hashem gave her the schus that those parts of her body actually merited burial. That's how much every little action is not swept under the rug. In the meantime, have a wonderful, meaningful day.